We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
You can watch the show anytime via our live stream on Twitch. Just go to twitch.tv/BostonWEEI and check out WEEI on YouTube for our video on demand content updated daily. Now, more of Gresh and Fourier on WEEI.
Lunch hour, Gresh and Fourier.
Lonely is the night when you find yourself alone. Your demons come.
We'll get to some stuff that Mike Reese had about the draft coming up. 3 days, 7 hours, and 58 minutes away. Fourier's countdown clock. By the way, this TV will explode at 8 p.m. on Thursday. I just want to let everybody know.
Yeah, it's when the draft starts, not when the Patriots make their first pick.
Yes, that's right. That would be the 8 o'clock start of the draft, which means the first pick will probably come rolling in about 8:22.
Because there's
going to be 20 minutes of farting around, and they got to do the whole "Welcome to the draft, everybody. Detroit isn't as bad as it seems. Now here's noted asshat Roger Goodell."
Just open Twitter. They leak the picks anyway.
I mean, they really do.
I thought they stopped doing that, though. I thought they,
day two and day three, it's no holds barred.
Yeah, how about this? I will leak something right now. The New England Patriots will take whatever quarterback is not taking the two before them.
What do you mean? I've heard they're open for business. I heard that they're taking phone calls. They're just waiting for the right offer. They're waiting for that Godfather offer to kind of be presented to them.
It's like a dork waiting for a prom date. They're sitting by a phone. That's all they're doing.
Well, not anymore. What happens now is there's a whole ceremony that you have to do in order to
ask
for a prom date. Yeah, you have to basically propose to them to go to prom with you. That's the way it works. I don't know. It's been a long time since we've been in high school. It's a whole thing. It's a whole thing. I don't know what the kids, who decided that they needed posters and flowers and magic tricks and who the hell knows what else they need.
Because it's all social media pandering.
Yeah.
Oh, look what it says on my poster board.
Sign. Look at me, what I did. It's all literally for likes.
And for the record, though, I always feel like it would put whoever was being asked, the girl or the boy, like in a really uncomfortable situation. Like, you went to all this trouble.
Again,
I guess I have to say yes.
Right, because you don't want to be the person who rejected somebody who made a sign on social media.
Look how witty the sign is.
I saw a video of that over the weekend. It was a guy who put like signs up along their side of the road, and his girlfriend goes, "That's a stupid way to ask somebody to prom." And then it was him asking her to prom.
Oh, gee, again, it's too much pressure. Just go with your friends. Just go with your buddies.
It would actually be pretty cool to say no.
That would be pretty dope.
Again, there's the ones you see these proposals at games where it's like, oh, he proposed to her and she turned him down. And the crowd's like, ooh. It's like, yes, because it was all set up from the
fake.
Get-go
yeah.
for you to put it on social media and be like, whoa, check this video out.
You'd like to think that if you're going to have a proposal, whether it is in a phone booth, a portalette, or at a baseball game, you'd have a pretty good inkling that you know you're going to get a yes. I'd like to think so. So I'm with Billy on the whole. The ones that are in ballparks, those ones feel a little more set up. Yeah, it's all it is. Really. It's like the dynasty.
You're just pandering
for clicks.
You can just say no. It's okay.
You know the dirtiest word in the English language is not the F word.
The C word?
Not even the C word.
Well, that's become more acceptable, by the way.
The dirtiest word in the English language is no.
It really is the hardest thing for people to say in almost everything.
Yeah.
I actually practice it. Even though I want to say yes, I just say no. And I want to say yes for whatever. I just go no.
I don't envision you as the kind of person that would have an issue in saying no.
No, I don't. But what I've done is it's like strength training. You know, what I've done is condition my body, you know, to say no. Because even though I want to say yes, I still say no. It makes me stronger. When a really tough situation comes up, I just go no.
Right.
There goes my head.
Let's go no.
Hey, listen, nowadays.
So it's so liberating to say no. I actually love saying no.
God forbid you use the word no. It makes you feel like a hero, for crying out loud.
They're off to find the hero of the day.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
Try it, though. It is. You do have to condition yourself
to
saying no. Because
you have to have gumption.
You can't, you know, worry about somebody's feelings. Oh, man, I think we really bumped out if I say no. No. It's so liberating when you say it, too. It's so liberating. It's
remember
so.
Remember your words.
What?
Remember your words.
What? What do you mean?
Just saying.
I think he's saying when you hear the word no, he wants you to remember your own advice.
Oh, yeah. I'm okay with people telling me no. There's a workaround. Where one door closes,
sure,
another one opens.
Which is really no to a point. Here's what it is. You can say no to Fourier. However, you are guaranteed to be asked, if not one, at least two follow-ups to try to get off the exit ramp and kind of go around the detour of the no.
Just ask it a different way. All right, let me ask you this way. Okay, no. Still no? Okay. How about if I say it this way?
Right? There's that. What about this scenario?
What if I get really excited this time when I bring it up? What if you say no, but I say no, but listen to me, hear me out.
Yeah, what if I try to trick you like this is so much fun to say yes because I'm bringing you in like you're part of it now.
Yeah, yeah.
Correct. Oh, yeah, let's mm-hmm. do it. Awesome. Took me a while.
Who had the more impressive game one win, the Bruins or the Celtics?
No.
Impressive.
The Red Sox.
I don't know, really. We were just going to leave them out. Hold on, real quick. They only won 1-0, Nick.
Not 6-1. Yeah. I'm on crank.
This is the best thing for the Red Sox, by the way.
What's that? The fact that they swept? Yeah, that works.
No. Well, that's part of the story, though.
They kind of got forgotten about this weekend.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right? So with more injuries than I think anyone even could imagine at this point in time.
Yeah.
For a team that needed everything to go right, to be competitive, like in the best case scenario, everything is going wrong and they're still winning.
Yeah, and then
you got the Bruins and you got the draft and then you got the Celtics. I mean,
I wonder if this Red Sox team is going to be streaky as the day is long. You know, like they won 7 of 10, then they lost 7 of 10. Now they turn around and they sweep Pittsburgh. So you're going to turn around and, you know, lose 2 of 3 to Cleveland or get swept on the other end, considering the record that the Indians have. There is the part of me that is wondering, oh, boy, is this going to be not only an extreme season, but it's going to be 7-game win streak, losers of 6 of 7, 10-game win streak, lose 9 in a row, one of those type years where it's just wild swings of success and failure.
Yeah, you know who hates the Fenway experience?
Who's that?
The players. They're better on the road than they are home. They hate the Fenway experience.
Well,
the only people, the most important people who should enjoy the Fenway experience, they're telling you something. They don't like it.
Well, the Red Sox playing the Pirates and the A's definitely help.
That's fine. Because they're still not the worst in the league.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, you would think with the Red Sox payroll, they would at least be able to beat some of those teams that are just literally spending nothing relative to
neither
even
are
what
you.
The Red Sox
you're
are.
Not spending anything
well,
either.
Well, yeah, you are. I mean, you know, the next
well, at
time,
least your lineup that you're throwing say, out there is not making any money.
The next time the Pirates have a $200 million payroll will be the first time.
Yeah.
But Bruins or Celtics, better game one win.
I actually like Nick's question better. When we started the show,
what was his question at the beginning?
When we had the open,
when we played the open, it was a
Celtics highlight. And I was like, well, why did you play a Celtics highlight? Is it just because it was? He said it was more important.
He said it was the most recent game.
I know, but that was why. But as far as
But
didn't you say that the Bruins were more important win?
Yeah, easily.
Yeah, and I kind of agree with you on that one because the Celtics are going to beat up and destroy the Heat.
Okay.
Regardless of culture and attitude and dirty play, mm-hmm. they are just more talented. Top to bottom, I would say more talented. And being as kooky and as crazy as the NHL playoffs are and how poorly they played last year, they needed this win. And they needed it in convincing fashion. And I would say go back to the regular season.
Because I did ask impressive, not important. However, you are getting there.
I am getting there. And the whole idea that the last two regular season games with the Bruins lost, remember how like...
Oh, yeah. I was very conflicted.
I didn't even care about it. I didn't think it was a big deal at all. And obviously, neither did they. Because they had no problem with it. They didn't look like they didn't play. It's like they were struggling to end the season. So I'm going to go with Bruins.
Yeah, I think in terms of if we're to tweak it, because I started with impressive. In terms of importance, yes, it was definitely the Bruins, because you don't want to give Toronto any momentum. And just straight up, without Jimmy Butler, Miami's dead. And we know that even with Jimmy Butler, the Celtics were likely to win the series anyway. But the more impressive win was the Bruins on Saturday, and it's for three reasons for me. Number one, they went against a team who tried to beat the Bruins at their own game, and the Bruins kind of smacked them around
shoe fly.
A little bit.
Definitely,
no,
shoe
no
fly.
Question.
What are you doing?
Number two is Swayman has continued his good run against Toronto, and if it's me, I'm not farting around with that tonight. Now, I know we talked to Andrew Raycroft last hour. He kind of intimated that it seemed like Ullmark was going to get the nod. But the Swayman was a big part of it. And I thought, at least we'll see what happens tonight, but I thought it would give Jim Montgomery a little bit of a baseline to then start reacting off of in terms of how you want to do all this stuff with the goalie. Here's the other thing, too.
So that was two. Number three?
Winning at home.
Ooh.
Not that it isn't important for the Celtics, but with the Bruins, because of the final line change and because of the way the game is played, I put more importance on home games than road games when it comes to the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's the only sport in which there is that kind of, I mean, okay, great. Guys play in a loud arena. Hoopy-doo, big deal. You deal with that all the time. That's about the most you're going to get in the NBA. Having that final change gives you certain mismatches. There were times where the Bertuzzi line just got abused by speed out there. That group couldn't deal with the DeBrusque line. That's a part of being at home.
Well, see, to me, that would be number. Hold on, I was going. That would be number four. That would be number four.
Number four.
That would be number four.
That's right. You forgot one in your number four.
Would be. Wait, can you do that?
No.
That'd be the secondary scoring, where the stars, the most important players, didn't give you the goal. So it's almost like, you know, found money in a way, where, you know, your secondary scoring comes from guys that you didn't necessarily expect it to be.
Okay, now hang tight, because do we need to put a little bit of a caveat on it was quote-unquote secondary scoring, but it was also on the power play. Now, that's a special team. So for me, I don't know if I necessarily look at – if it were Jake DeBrusque or the third line, let's say, scoring 5-on-5, then I could go down that road. To me, when you're scoring special teams goals, I look at that as your power play one, power play two. Those are choices that are being made to put those people out there. So to me, I don't consider it quote-unquote secondary scoring the way I would Hauser or Pritchard
sure.
with the Celtics.
That's sure.
Because they were special teams
goals.
Yeah,
that's fair. So the Bruins win most impressive and most important.
They
win the two I's.
Most impressive and most important would definitely go to the Bruins. And I hate to like make it sound like we're kind of taking the Celtics for granted a little bit, but I think the problem is we look at Toronto relative to the Bruins and think, okay, they could, if Toronto plays well, they could be a factor. They could give the Bruins issues. I think for a lot of us, even though Miami is the team that we've got in the back of our brains, without Jimmy Butler, I don't think Celtic fans are taking Miami seriously.
No, but
as a real threat.
I tell you what I do like. I do like the fact that if I'm like in the Celtics locker room today and we're talking about the game and we're just talking about, because I feel like there needs to be a response. I feel like there needs to be, okay, this is the way it's going to go. We kind of assumed it, but we saw it in the fourth quarter when the whole, like, you know, cheap play.
Yeah, the Caleb Martin foul on
okay,
JT.
Which didn't really need to be, but whatever. And it's fair. You can't – no foul on that. Like, no, like, you know, nobody's getting kicked out of the game.
Just tell me the rules of engagement
yeah.
so we can play that way too. That's the way I look at that.
That is the way I look at
yep.
it too. So, and my thing would always be, okay, well, now I know. So the first time I blame myself for just being, you know, naive and assuming, that you're going to play by the rules. And now you realize, okay, this is the part, the survival part that we're talking about. And now I know how you plan about going about your business. Now let's see how you handle it when we do it to you. That is the killer instinct that I think I'm really, really waiting to see. I want to know if they're going to have like a, almost like a hockey mentality. We got to pay them back. Somebody's got to pay for this. They need to know that they're not going to come around and treat us like a bunch of chumps. So somebody may need to get, you know, a foul or a technical, or somebody needs to do something. And don't worry, we have your back. That is the next level that I think once they get there, good freaking luck stopping them.
Yeah, that's very fair. That is very fair, especially in the good luck stopping them department. That's the part that has us, I mean, God almighty, to think that we're not only going to have a hell of a month of May in theory. We should be able to follow this into June if these teams do what we think they're going to do. Could be a heck of a lot of fun over the next 6 weeks. Well, we haven't done a draft yet, Fourier.
Wow, I'm going through withdrawals.
I know.
Holy cow. The third pick. Wait, who sourced something? Who watched all the tape?
Oh, well, this is more Mike Reese intelligence. You know, Fourier, whenever there was the big Gerard Mayo press conference on him becoming the head coach, one of the things that Gerard Mayo said was, we're going to knock down the silos. Everybody's going to collaborate, right? It's going to be the world of collaboration. Then why is it there seems to be an immense focus on winning the deal, if there is one, with the number three pick? Because Fourier, I heard from people that was the Bill Belichick way. Had to win the deal. So unprecedented bag of what? Peanuts? Pretzels? That are going to get it done? We'll get into all of this off Mike Reese next.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Now, more Gresh and Fourier
on WEEI.
And streaming on WEEI.com.
Certainly they're prepared to take a quarterback here. They have a high grade on Jaden Daniels. If he's available at three, I think they would probably pounce on that. And Drake May, too, they're high on. Yeah. So the feeling around the league right now is that Drake May would be that pick at number three. They are open for business, as de facto GM Elliot Wolf said, but I'm told they haven't gotten an offer yet that would wow them or would move them off that pick. They know they need a quarterback in the worst way long term.
That is Jeremy Fowler on ESPN telling us kind of what we sort of have known ever since Gerard Mayo got the job. Whee! QB! Here we go! We decided in January, everybody. Now we're just going to retrofit the idea. And, well, when there's three guys at the top of the draft, I'll tell you, the strategy of let the others in front of you determine who your pick. That's a formula for a championship, Fourier.
How do you dress this up now that it's been so long since that opening press conference about the best player at the most important position? How do you dress this up to convince, just say me, okay?
Yeah.
That
this was the best player at the most important position, or was it the best player available?
No, that convinced me that you're better served to trade the pick. Because that's the ultimate wild card. And I don't even know if it's a wild card, because I think they're too chicken to do anything but take a quarterback at three.
Well, that's why we keep hearing about the, you know, whether it's a $5, a $7, or an $8 biggie bag full of delicious draft picks for them to consume down there.
Yeah, how often have you really desired a biggie bag and said, you know what, I'm just going to wait for the phone to ring because I hope somebody brings me the bag.
Yeah, maybe somebody will. Like, yeah, maybe one call of my friends will bring me
You coming around the neighborhood? Oh, geez, I wasn't going to tell you what to do, but I'm really hungry, if you know what I mean.
Well, I know that, again, we knock down silos. We communicate down there now. I know that Bill Belichick was widely criticized, and it's really funny some of the about faces that happen on text and via Twitch as well.
Like what?
When it's the whole, Bill just wants to be cheap and win the deal. Now we're in the win the deal mode with the new crew. So maybe it could just be this, Christian. Maybe it's just the way it is in the NFL and people want to bitch about Bill. Or there really is a hang up on, by God, it's my first time and I'm going to win the deal. It's my first time.
I'm going to impress everybody.
It's my first time and she's going to orgasm like never before.
Right? How many blue pills does he need?
From Mike Reese's column on ESPN.com, he writes, this is a franchise-altering opportunity, and as Wolf and first-year head coach Gerard Mayo have previously said, the only way they're moving down is if another team offers an unprecedented deal. Leaving the door open for the possibility, or for that possibility, is good business more than anything. Why close it before it's necessary to do so? Well, you're trying to open it after it was already closed because of the giddiness of we, the new people, taking over. Unprecedented deal. So what you're saying is, if you're Elliott Wolf, is I don't care what the 49ers did to move up to 3. I don't care what anybody else did to move up. I'm Elliott Wolf, and we're the New England GD Patriots. And by God, if you're going to move up to us, it better be the best deal ever given. Therefore, unprecedented. So instead of looking for the fair deal or a deal that you know can work for you and you be resolute in your thoughts on it, instead it's got to be an unbelievable biggie bag full of delicious bacon junior cheeseburgers at a level we've never seen before.
Well, it's the Godfather offer. It's an offer you can't refuse, right? You cannot refuse it regardless of how desperate you are for or to fill that position, you know, unless you really feel like you've found the second coming of, you know, fill in the blank, a franchise quarterback.
Do you really think they want to trade this pick and are trying to smoke someone out and have their cake and eat it too at an unbelievable, unprecedented level? Or are they just begging for the unprecedented offer to come their way from someone more desperate than them?
Yeah, but why? It's funny, like when somebody announces it and lets everybody know, and I mean, I guess he was asked a question, so he's answering it. So maybe there's some, you know, a little bit different there. But I think everybody knows that any team is open for business if the right deal comes around, if it's unprecedented, if it's too good to turn away of every single team.
So
if you gave the Chicago Bears,
you can't
give him more than – you can only give him a certain amount of picks, but you can throw players in. You can throw picks in. If you gave him something nutty, I'm sure they'd be like, oh, geez, you know what? We'll take Jaden.
So here's what it is the Patriots could have a very good deal on the table. It could be the 2 first-rounders from Minnesota this year and the first-rounder next year. If I'm to go by the reports and that the deal has to be unprecedented, while that is intriguing and enticing, apparently that's not going to get it done. Apparently the Vikings are going to have to do something else to be able to convince New England. Now, how many teams are QB thirsty, to use the word again right now? One's at 11 and one's at number 12. So you're telling them, if you don't make us the Godfather offer, we're not moving. And if I'm the GM on the other end, I go, thanks. You made my decision much easier. I'll use your words against you. You want something unprecedented? I'll give you something fair for that pick. I might even throw in a little sweetener. But if you want unprecedented, guess what? I just hang up the phone.
Isn't that almost like a way of protecting themselves against just everything? Hey, listen, no.
Oh, you mean because their ears are on and they're worried about what everybody is saying about them down there? So now this is the verbal insulation from fan criticism?
Well, listen, if I do it, everybody out there, Patriot fans, it was unprecedented. You had to say yes, okay? We couldn't say no, regardless of what was going on. I still feel like even though they get a good deal, call it a great deal, right? This is a good deal for them.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't think they make the deal, because I think they believe it's too risky. They don't want to risk. They don't want to chance it.
What's riskier, making the pick and potentially having it flop, or making what would be viewed as kind of a fair market trade? Because now that I think of it more, you're 1,000,000% right. It's the whole throwing the word on, oh, this is an unprecedented deal. Yeah. We have to.
Yeah, don't be critical. It's great. This is good for us.
Yeah, so you're right. I think there is a little bit of that whole insulation in there. Well, you know, if they bowled us over, then it becomes, oh, well, it's on the other team for not being desperate enough to call us and give us what we were looking for, which was crazy to begin with.
Yeah, because if they keep the, I feel like they believe, regardless of the situation, if either situation, you know, is wrong, they grab a guy at with the number three pick, it doesn't work after 3 years, mm-hmm. and then they trade these picks, and the new pick doesn't work. All I still think that they'll get more criticism, and they'll probably feel like it's more risky trading the pick. And there'll be more criticism from it because it's really like it really makes it seem like they're trying to be real fancy and cute, where they should just take what's in front of them. Like hopefully you'll never be in this position ever again. The more times you're in this position, the more times you know you prove that your team sucks.
Oh, it'll be more fun next year than this year because this year they kind of took all the steam out of it. Next year, there'll be a whole year's worth of mistakes and things like that, evaluations, half the defense free agents at the end of the year. So we're going to get all horned up for, you know, large defensive tackles, another corner, maybe a linebacker or something like that. And it'll be 5 or 6, something like that. But next year, there'll be more possibilities. There'll be a little more ability to move up. And everybody down there will have been there a year, so they could choose whether to turn their ears off or not. So next year's draft process will be similar but different to this year's.
If they traded this number three pick and the person or the team that moved up to grab that player at three ends up being just a consistent Pro Bowl player, top of the top five quarterback, holy cow. It'll be all the teams that passed up on Patrick Mahomes. Oh, the guys that let Lamar Jackson go all the way to the end of the first round. All these players who people just passed up on.
Drake May will get compared to the two guys above him, no question.
If I'm a player, too, like I wouldn't mind being drafted later. I feel like there's less stress. Like Caleb Williams in Chicago.
Be ready.
Because
you're the man walking in the door.
Oh, yeah. And the criticism, the amount of criticism that it's going to be pointed in his direction for not being the savior, and the dude has had the best of everything his whole life.
Yep.
Suddenly you're in a pro market that's like Boston, and they've never had, when was the last time they had a good quarterback?
Well, he's the savior. I mean, when you look at the last 10 years of drafts or whatever, I think the last guy that was worth a damn, people would argue, would be Jay Cutler.
Jay Cutler, Rex Grossman, maybe.
Right, he took him to the Super Bowl.
I mean, he doesn't get credit for any of it.
Oh, God, no. That's the loss to Patriots Super Bowl right there. Our draft coverage on WEEI is presented by McFarland Energy, Greater Boston, and Cape Cod's choice for home heating oil delivery, an expert HVAC product and services at McFarlandEnergy.com, by Chock Full of Nuts Coffee, and by McCormick Spices. We were watching a little bit of Adam Schefter on McAfee. Basically, Schefter was like, I'm still hearing the same thing out of Washington, which is it's going to be Jaden Daniels. So I want to move to Kevin O'Connell for a moment because you and I just talked about the whole Minnesota deal, up, down, all around, all that. Kevin O'Connell apparently was giving a talk at a church over the weekend. And it might have went down Thursday or Friday night, and the audio just got out there. Nick, did you take the question out of this, Nick? Just okay, good. A member of the congregation had his football hat on that night. He did not ask Kevin O'Connell about Jesus or anything like that. He asked Kevin O'Connell about the quarterback situation. And is there a difference basically between Drake May and J.J. McCarthy? How do you go about figuring all that out in terms of weighing the difference between the two, right? Kevin O'Connell didn't give a straight line answer, but he gave a detailed answer. Here's what the Minnesota Vikings coach and at one time former Patriots quarterback had to say.
For a couple of years, I've been kind of known as the quarterback killer when it comes to the draft in Eagan because The feeling that everybody, that I feel from our fan base is when we get this next guy, he's going to be the guy. And I feel it. I know you guys all feel it. So I have, you know, had to, you know, in a lot of ways fight off some mistakes from being made, mainly because the evaluation process I go through, I think about the things that are fixable. I think about the things that are coachable. And then you think about the things that, you know, you could coach another 15 years with the player and you might not be able to fix. And hope and faith are wonderful things. I do like them to not necessarily be strategies. So I do very much believe in certain principles of playing the quarterback position. I believe the footwork in the lower half of any quarterback can be fixed with the proper coaching and teaching. And I think that when you see the good things on tape, you see things that they can do better on tape. You're looking for a lot of different things and to check a lot of boxes. And ultimately, when you feel like you find that guy, then you got to hope that 31 other teams are complicit in making sure that they can become a Minnesota Viking. But we only need one team to be complicit. Right. And like hopefully Patriots. We find that team and that
maybe
person's
you can
on
work
our
your
team.
Patriots connection at three.
You know,
I don't know.
I may or may not have sent a nice bouquet of flowers to Robert Kraft the other day, but.
And they were beautiful. Azaleas on my face.
Who's this
favorite.
From again?
Who
this
is
awesome.
This? We wasted a pick on him. Wow. What do you make of that, Andy? You know what I took away
Nothing.
From that? No, but oh, bull crap.
Nothing.
Come on. I took away this from Kevin O'Connell. How many quarterback coaches have you heard over the years saying, the lower half of anybody can be fixed?
Oh, okay. That was him. You
that
know.
Is rubbish.
Yeah. In one hand, he said he was like known as a quarterback killer. Now anyone can be fixed with, you know, their lower half can be. Yeah, they can be fixed until you realize it can't be fixed.
So you know what it makes me realize is that the way Kevin O'Connell sort of described his thoughts on quarterbacks is that there really wouldn't be maybe in his mind a massive difference between Drake May and J.J. McCarthy. If he looks at it that the lower half of a QB can just be fixed like that with some good coaching or whatever, that to me is the kind of guy who, and you know these kind of coaches, oh, I can fix him. I can fix that. I can handle that. I can do that. Hell, even here in New England, oh, Tom Brady's here. You can bring in AB. We'll be okay. We'll figure it out. We got a good locker room. Nope. And then you realize pretty quick it doesn't work. And that's what I wonder. Like, if I'm a Minnesota fan, that answer maybe scares me a little bit. Because I'm not saying Kevin O'Connell looked at it and was like, yeah, I can take anybody and fix them. But he was kind of walking down that sort of lane a little bit, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, when it comes to all the deals that are going to be made are going to be made in I don't think any of the three picks, when it's all said and done, are moving anywhere.
I mean, the top three are staying where they are.
I don't think the top three.
I'm with Arizona at four feels like
imagine,
the point in the draft.
Can you imagine if the Patriots gamble and then somebody behind them that they don't know about, that they haven't done enough research on, wants a quarterback also, and already has a deal in place and move in front of them, and they get left with nobody? Or they end up with their fifth choice, who if depending on who you ask could be a top three in somebody else's draft board.
Well, let's remember they did say they were comfortable with
that's
all
my point.
Six.
So if
which
you're comfortable,
is bull crap.
I know, but that's so why say that? So much of it.
Everybody's trying to smoke out the tray.
Yeah,
that's
it's
all
like,
it is.
So you're gonna fall for a smoke screen? Like how much of the information? I go back to Bill because I feel like Bill is talking just like any other GM or head coach. At what point in time am I going to tell anybody, Adam Schefter, I don't care who it is, Fowler, you name it, why in the hell would I tell them my true intentions? Why? Why would I tell them who I'm going to pick? I would never, ever tell them who I'm going to pick. I don't care how much I trust you.
Because maybe there is another leak in the quote-unquote circle of trust. Maybe it isn't Mayo or Wolf who are telling anybody anything outside the organization. But how about some of the people who got in the room for the first time? Yippee! Are they the ones who can't shut up, tell somebody who tells somebody. I mean, Elliot Wolf's been around enough draft rooms that I would expect a little bit of cloak and dagger from him. Mayo, keep him away from the mic this time of year. He's not going to be able to help you. And then that's just being honest, not being mean. But don't we know there are others down there who know? And don't we know that it's more than just, again, if they knock down the silos and it's all collaborative, how many people could we point in the finger at who could be the leak or the mole or whatever? How about this, Fourier? Even you and I have talked about, we have a pizza bet. By next Friday, I expect the announcement of Matt Groh gone. He's in the room. Can he be trusted? And I'm not just pointing the finger at him, but if there is all kinds of cross-pollination in there of, well, these are Bill's guys. Well, whose guys are these exactly? Well, here's Elliot's people, da-da-da. If they're all putting all this together, they all get to see some of it on some level. Who's to say it's the new people in charge that are kind of letting the cat out of the bag or putting some info or some subterfuge out there? But again, if it's all collaboration, I got to assume it's more than two people in the room, right?
Well, then that's going to go quick for us, Thank. That pick's going to come in the first 20 minutes of the draft on Thursday. So we'll just kick back and enjoy the rest of it.
The 857, so you're saying there's a chance for a 56-year-old like me, Kevin O'Connell, will work on your lower half. Whatever that means.
Yeah, I know, right?
It is time for Big Deal, No Big Deal. And, well, folks, if you live in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and you own a truck, you're about to hear from Nut next. Big Deal, No Big Deal with Gresham Fourier.
Why did you read it?
Now, back to the guys.
Gresh and Fourier on WEEI.
Alrighty, big deal, no big deal. I know, so Gresh wouldn't read my tease, and Nick warned me that it's a little too close to being, I don't know what it is, but I didn't read it.
Too raunchy.
You think that's too raunchy?
I think so.
What do you think? If I showed this to Ken and said, Ken, green light, red light, what do you think he would say?
I guarantee red light.
Really?
Yeah.
I believe so.
If you got to question it, red light.
That's general rule.
I think you guys underestimate how, a little on the edge Ken likes to live.
Oh, I thought you were going to say we underestimating how the FCC works.
I was going to say, you'd say it, I'd get the text, I can't say that.
Okay, and then he would say, go back, dump it from 10 minutes ago, and just get rid of everything.
Which is impossible, but yeah.
Okay, so, you got a truck, right?
Oh, yeah. I used to have a truck. I used to have
a
pickup truck. Now I have a very comfortable SUV.
Okay. Which is technically, basically, still a truck.
Which apparently makes me a terrible person.
You're a horrible person.
According to the person we're about to talk about.
Oh, you're talking about Secretary of Transportation Monica Tibbetts Nutt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's kind of nuts when she comes up with a couple of these programs. At a recent gathering, the question was basically just, how to make transportation better.
Greg, get nuts. Let's get nuts.
Oh, we're about to get nuts. Okay, so how to make transportation better. There's two clips I'm going to play for you. Here's the first one.
We're not censoring this. I'm going to talk about tolling. I'm going to talk about charging TNCs more. I'm going to talk about potentially charging more for package deliveries, charging more for payroll tax, basically going after everybody who has money.
Well, that's really the line right there. This is the first part of Big Deal, No Big Deal. You're going to increase
everybody who has money.
You're going to increase the state payroll tax. You're going to be jacking up local excise taxes. You're going to be charging more for Uber, Lyft rides, package delivery services. Basically, if you got money, we're coming after you. Big deal, no big deal.
Yeah, it's a huge deal. It is the easiest way to pander to a small group of people who are myopic thinkers. How's that?
Myopic, huh?
Yeah.
Wow, do you think people understand myopic?
If not, then they're the ones that are going to end up paying more money when it's all said and done.
See, here's the deal. We're not done yet because it actually gets worse. And just for the record, everybody who's listening right now, strong candidate for Hardo of the Day. For some of the things that were being said, how they were being said, it's almost like they were trying to start a fight. Hey, you want to start a fight? I'll tax you more. You got money? Oh, here comes another one. Hey, you own a truck? This is the one for you. If you own a truck, I'm telling you, you need to sell it because they're coming for you.
right now. They're coming for you right now, Nick.
I mean, that's just true. We can't price them high enough or put enough fees on them enough that's going to stop the type of person who wants to buy that car. And I am 100% passing judgment on someone who wants to drive basically an 18-wheeler as their personal car. We have no control over it. It's horrible. And the thing is, you know, right now we're talking about the weight of EV cars and especially larger EV SUVs. So this is something, trust me, we're concerned about.
I'm telling you, easy hardo of the day. So forcing working class drivers of pickup trucks,
yeah,
which she claimed, Gresh, are basically 18-wheelers.
Yeah.
Big deal, no big deal.
The over-exaggeration of the whole 18-wheeler thing is kind of cute, okay?
The type of person who wants to buy that car.
Yeah, there you go.
you're the type of person.
So here's
what
the thing.
What does that even mean?
So here's the thing. If I looked at, what is her name again? Monica Tibbetts Nutt. If I looked at her and judged her the way she is judging people who drive big trucks, guess what would happen to me? I'd probably get yelled at, canceled, whatever. Things would be called into question because, God forbid, I looked at someone like her and made a judgment. Just like she's judging all of the people who either drive or ride in SUVs or pickup trucks and stuff like that, right? So, so basically, if you're a hardworking person out there and you need a pickup truck, A, you automatically drive an 18-wheeler, you jerks, and B, there is no context from this woman whatsoever. It's blanket across the board. I don't care whether you're driving an 18-wheeler, a pickup truck. If you're a plow guy, which we desperately need in a state where there's a whole bunch of snow, no, we're going to go out there in our EV cars. Let me ask you another thing, Fourier, and this is where this idiot, I'll judge you, idiot. How's the power grid ready to hold up on all those EV cars? I'll wait. And here's another one, too, for a transportation genius. What are you doing to be able to support all those cars, not only from the grid, but the accessibility for people to whip around town in them and all that stuff and actually maybe get to where they want to go? That's if they want to drive within 50 miles. Like, here's the thing. This party in this state and these politicos, don't judge, don't be mean, let's let everybody in. And then we hear from one of them that apparently the SUV and the pickup truck drivers are those people. If I said that in the wrong context, what would happen?
I know that's basically saying you people. But real quickly, though, because I got to get a quick little hard-o ruling. I got to put her on the scale real quickly. Everybody in on this, because this was the quote that literally made me think, okay, she's trying way too hard to be tough and pushing an agenda that nobody is listening to at the moment.
The type of person who wants to buy that car.
You're the type of person. Here's the money line right here, okay? Once I say it, it's now a policy. So on the hardo scale, 10 being a massive hardo, trying way too hard to get respect when it's not earned, that would be a 10. To not being a hardo, being a 1. I'm going to start with Nick. On the hardo scale, what do you give Miss Nutt?
Like an 8.
That's an 8?
It's up there.
Okay, I agree. Billy, hardo scale, 1 to 10. Once I say it, Billy, it's now a policy.
Yeah, it's a tough act. I'll give it like an 8.5.
8.5.
Oh, no, this is a 10 because what was the line again? Can you repeat it one more
time? Once I say it, it's now a policy.
Once I say it, it is now a policy, maybe even a law. If that came out of that guy's mouth, what would the reaction be?
I tell you what, it's a
10.
It's a hard 10 for
Maybe
me.
That's a question you should ask China.
Oh, no.
Here's the last one. It says, we're getting really, really aggressive. We are pushing for less warnings, more citations. I'm telling you, nothing slows down someone real quick like getting your license suspended. Well, that I kind of understand. I'd take an Uber for like 2 months.
Oh, that's...
And you still never slowed down.
Yeah. And again... Isn't this the party of thought?
No.
Is the party of sensitivity?
No.
Isn't that where so now it's just the we'll just take away again. I'll just take away people's licenses. Say it like that. What's the reaction? You hear this, people are like, oh, my God. Hopefully there's somebody at City Hall listening to every – I mean, the Greg Hill Show was all over this today because it just – again, if you want to know why people are leaving Massachusetts in droves, you just heard it for the last 4 minutes.
It was – to me, it was a big part of it was the message, but also the tone. Almost like, hey, I'm coming for you. You drive a truck.
Yeah, I'm coming for you.
I'm coming for you. Here's my chance. I'm coming. Listen, you can run. If you try to run, I'll find you. I'll tax you. I'll slip a boot on your car. I'll make it so difficult. I'll put so many taxes on your truck that you won't have the ability to make a living.
What a great line from I Am All on the Twitch. So a plumber goes to her house in an Uber or an electric car. What happens if they show up in a pickup truck?
Listen, you can't hold all your tools.
What happens if there's got to be construction for someone that makes almost $200,000 a year and sat on the board of the failing MBTA for many years while it crumbled?
Well, you've been warned. Everybody with a truck, you have been warned. That's a big deal, no big deal.
We are going to get to John Sterling's crappy going away gift from the Yankees because it must be seen and discussed. We're 3 days away from finding out which QB the Patriots get to choose. The Celtics are winners. The Bruins are winners. The Red Sox are winners. What the hell is going on? Final hour next.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.